Here's our baseball analyst, Steve Phillips. How you doing, Steve?
I'm doing well, guys. I think you guys are the best. You guys are the greatest.
Thank you,
you're the
Steve.
Best.
Well, so you good. Are. It's actually
oh,
you,
you are.
Yeah, you're
right.
You're the best. Don't ever forget that, man.
I appreciate
Don't
that,
ever
guys.
Forget that. All right, before we get to Game 5, let's look back on last night, and we'll just lay it on the line for you. Did Joe West cost Houston that win last night?
Well, I think, Joe, I can understand why Joe West made the call that he did. I think he got it wrong. But I think in the spur of the moment, from where he was standing, I can understand how he might think that there was interference. The problem wasn't Joe West. The problem's the guys back in Chelsea in New York who are doing the replay review. They blew it. They got it wrong. I don't. But you can't tell me that you watch that video and you don't think that Mookie Betts' glove is beyond the wall. The fans weren't reaching onto the field. No, it's not about, yes, Mookie Betts could have made the catch if there were no fans in the stadium. He probably could have made the catch. But that's not the threshold that has to be met to decide whether or not there's fan interference. If the ball leaves the field of play, it's open game. The fans can go for the baseball. They can knock his glove. They can do whatever they want. And that's what happened in that moment. He wasn't still in the field of play. I don't know what was inconclusive from there looking at the video. Because what they did is they let the call on the field stand, which meant they didn't have enough conclusive evidence to overrule Joe West's call. So I can understand Joe West in the moment making that call. I don't understand, you know, four guys sitting around a video watching that thinking that it was not a home run.
Well, I understand the basic rules of replay. It applies in every sport. Whatever the original call was, you have to have enough evidence to overturn it. The problem is Joe West isn't close to the call. Like, so what his original call was to me was completely irrelevant. Like, it should not have mattered. They should, in those circumstances, you should go to New York or wherever it is, and they have, it becomes basically a blank canvas. And let's just look at it. Forget what Joe West originally called. Because how's he supposed to know? How's he supposed to see the angle from where he was standing?
I completely agree. This idea that the call on the field matters is ridiculous. Like, the umpires in the moment, it's a tough job. In what we've seen, can you imagine how different history would be if we actually got the calls right?
Right.
Like, who knows who would have won championships and playoffs and everything else? They get so many calls wrong because it's a really hard thing to do. But I completely agree. What Joe West called in that moment, spur of the moment, ball going to the wall, you know, at 100 miles per hour exit velocity, getting to that barrier and trying to make a judgment, he made his best guess as to what happened on the play. But the guys back in New York who are looking at the video, why would Joe West call matter at all? They actually have the best chance to evaluate whatever they think. If they think it was 51% a home run, then it should be a home run. It shouldn't be some level of standard that, well, we don't have enough conclusive evidence. If you can look at it and say it's 51% a home run, then it should be a home run. And I don't think there's any way that you couldn't think that by looking at the video, but that is the standard that they use right now. And unfortunately for the Astros, they lost a two-run home run.
With Steve Phillips, our TSN 1050 baseball analyst.
How much stones does it take to make that catch that Ben Attendee made in the outfield to close out that game,
wow,
Steve? I mean, that goes
gutsy,
by you,
man. You're right. Right on. I mean, it's they do the stat cast where they think, okay, based upon the exit velocity, where it was hit, where guys normally play, 79% of the time, that's a hit, that ball. But in that moment, in that game, where the reality is it's a two-run game at the time, bases loaded in two outs, and you know that if you dive and you don't make the play, that ball's going to get to the wall, the guy in first going to come around and score, and you're going to lose. There are a lot of guys who would have pulled up short. Play another hop, one run, maybe two score. It may tie the game, but he didn't do that. And that is why the Boston Red Sox have the best all-around outfield between Ben Attendee, Betts, and Jackie Bradley. And they were showing off last night.
Well, that throw by Betts was outrageous.
Incredible. That's what was a bummer for me, is that history was kind of, even though I guess it was determined in a way with the whole Joe West replay thing, it was kind of stripped and stolen from us, because if Betts made that catch and then threw out Kemp the way he did to start the eighth, we're talking about maybe the greatest defensive plays in the history of the ALCS.
Yeah, it's no doubt. And you know what? We start talking about that like the Willie Mays over-the-shoulder catch,
right,
what he did. That effort to time it and to jump and almost make that catch in right field was absolutely unbelievable. And you're right, the arm strength. Now, there was a play earlier in the game, and Benintendi played one off the wall. And the guy ended up beating it out for a double. But he came up throwing two. All three of those guys can throw. They're all center field caliber defenders. And Jackie Bradley is just showing right now he's figuring out how to hit. The other two guys are legitimate. Benintendi is going to be a 30-homer, 100-RBI guy, and he's going to hit, you know, 290 to 320. I mean, he reminds me a lot of Fred Lynn back in the day when he first broke in with the Boston Red Sox back then. And really just a solid all-around player, and Betts is a superstar.
Kimbrel got them the six outs, but, man, was it. It was not pretty. It was really tough sledding the whole way through the eighth and the ninth. And I had a flashback. That felt like Chapman in 16 with the Cubs to me. Only that was in the World Series. He ran out of gas. I don't know what they're going to do with Kimbrel. Like, they're going to need him again. I don't know if he can go tonight, but at some point in this series, if it gets extended beyond five. And they're going to need him in the World Series. But I don't have much faith in Kimbrel. But what else can Cora do in that situation?
Yeah, he can't do much else. I mean, they're already compromised a little bit. And Kimbrel's never been a two-inning guy, but yet he went there yesterday to get it. And he was, listen, he was on his roller skates trying to survive that one. He's a little scary right now. He can't command his fastball. And therefore, everybody lays off the other stuff and tries to wait for a fastball, and he can't get it over the plate. So he's got some real problems. And I think part of it, I think, is the energy of the moment. I think he's getting hyper. I think he's got to take a deep breath. When something starts to go wrong, he gets more hyped up. In a moment where you're already as hyper as you're ever going to be, you got to slow it down a little bit. It looks like the game's going 1,000 miles per hour and his hair's on fire when he's out there. And so, yeah, I think that there's a vulnerability there, but they seem to be overcoming every vulnerability right now. I mean, David Price on the mound today, he warmed up twice in the game yesterday, and he's pitching on short rest as it is, but it may be just what he needs where there's no expectation. Like, what can I expect out of David Price? He's pitching on short rest, and they warmed him up twice yesterday. So I don't have a lot to expect. Maybe it will be the thing that takes the pressure off of him, but it sure feels like this is the Astros game to lose tonight.
Oh, for sure. Verlander against Price. I mean, if this game was in July, I'd be like, this would be a 1-0 game, and it'll be a pitcher's duel, but because it's not.
You know he's thinking, though, like, this is the game I want to win, where no one's got any expectations. I just got to go out there and do this to prove to everybody. But in saying that, he's probably done that 20 times in his mind.
No kidding.
Yeah, over and over again. And here's the thing. Go back and look at the after game two, the press conference of David Price doing interviews. He's got the saddest, most tired eyes I've ever seen. He looks so, like, he hadn't slept in weeks, he looks like. He must be playing Fortnite all night long. Because, I mean, he doesn't look like he's sleeping at all. He's got bags under his eyes. His coloring looks different. He just looks awful. Mm-hmm. And it seems like maybe the stress of everything is getting to him.
Well,
I thought the same thing looking at him. He looks like he's not well. Like, he doesn't.
Stress.
That's Boston for you, man. When those fans turn on you. Like, at least this game isn't a Fenway
tonight. I think he's stressed
every
2 weeks when the checks come in.
But even when he played in Toronto, he looks like he's lost. He's not a big guy per se, but he looks like he's really thin. And
yeah, he doesn't look healthy. I agree. He looks, you know, sort of frail.
Well, him and Chris Sale, man. Pillars of health. Two big, lengthy left-handers that don't look that healthy, but they can chuck when they're on. So we'll see. Enjoy it tonight, Steve. We'll do it again soon. Thanks,
Terrific, guys. Thanks for having me.
There's Steve Phillips, our baseball analyst.